That was my track of the week, Pulse Rate by PKC the First. Now, every needless death, as you can imagine, and quite obviously, is a tragedy. But sometimes someone dies and it creates an outpouring of grief because that person is elevated to symbolise a wider problem, a wider issue, a defeat of innocence, a defeat of a young country. And the pain spreads out beyond the family into the Twitter sphere, Facebooker sphere. And people start to see the face of someone as representing the pain a whole country is going through. Pakistan has paid a very high price indeed in its fight against militancy. Thousands of civilians, police and security services have died. Fiza Malik was caught in the crossfire earlier this month, and she paid with her life. She was young, educated, and had just qualified as a lawyer. In the eyes of many people, she was a symbol of hope for the future of Pakistan. Her death, as I said, prompted an outpouring of grief in that country, with many who knew Fiza unable to believe she had been killed. Her second cousin, Anjum Leila Tahikeli, joins us now from our studio in Leeds. Anjum, welcome to the BBC Asia Network.
Thank you. Hi. Yeah.
Tell us, why do you think it is that so many people have reacted to the murder of Fiza? And of course, it's important to say there were 10 other people killed on that day in Islamabad.
11 others, actually.
Oh, was it 12 killed in total?
12 in total.
Oh, 12 in total, my apologies.
Male officers of the court and Fiza being the 12th. Fiza is an angel of hope. I was first introduced to Fiza a few years ago, so I'm the founder of Basic Human Rights, which is an international charity working in Pakistan. I've worked in Pakistan for many years, firstly when the Swat incursions happened, and Fiza's a cousin of a cousin. She's not my second cousin, but she's family.
Right.
And in 2011, when the floods happened again, I travelled to Sindh with Fiza's brother Saad. And the whole family are very, very committed to the vulnerability of the Pakistani people. Her father has been a civil servant for many years and helped weak and vulnerable people. And Saad wanted to travel with me for the medical camps. And all the way there, I remember coming back and saying to my daughter, I've never, ever come across a brother who, at the beginning of his sentence, in the middle and at the end, had Fiza, his sister's name, and just spoke about how wonderful she was and that we needed to meet and she would be amazing for the charity. And I had the pleasure of then meeting Fiza and speaking to her. And I recall her, just the hope that she had for Pakistan and what she wanted to do. And I looked at her and thought, here's a 20-year-old sat before me, but she's got so much wisdom. And I kept saying to her, goodness, you're such an inspiration. You're an angel of hope. 23 years old. It's a senseless death. It's a senseless death. But I was listening to some of the callers earlier, and you have to say that, I mean, I can go back to myself of why I founded an organisation, because when you see injustice, as you do, and I've worked in Syria, I've been embedded in Syria, in Libya, I've seen suffering of people. You have to create positive platforms and advocate for those weak and vulnerable. That's what we're there to do. When I found out about Fiza last week, a friend of mine sent me a text and said, here's a link to the BBC website. Have a look at this. It's just so senseless. And I first, her photo, picture went up, and I saw this beautiful young girl in her graduation gown. And I could not believe, because she has an unusual name, Fiza Malik. And I kept saying it over and over to myself, Fiza Malik. And I text Saad, her brother, and I said, is this our Fiza? And he said, yes. And he called her Shaheed, which people were earlier talking about martyrdom. And I've always sat at the other end and advocated and hear about bombs going off in Iraq and Pakistan and Afghanistan and everywhere in Syria. But when it's someone so close to you, someone of hope, it's so senseless. It's so senseless.
I mean, Anjum, Pakistan has had to endure so much, so much. And it seems as though with every small step forward, there seems to be 5 or 10 steps back. Are you optimistic about Pakistan? Because it has to be said that Fiza's own brothers didn't live in Pakistan, did they? They lived in Dubai. They wanted her to be in Dubai with them, didn't they?
But how do you pick your life up in that way? Fiza's parents lived in Islamabad. And, you know, if you take people like Fiza out of it, which they have, she was going to make such a positive difference in that country. And at first, when I heard about Fiza, I cried for the whole day and then got myself up and said, no way. No way can she be another statistic. And a good friend of mine, Lisa, said, I tweeted her and I said, Lisa, this is my family. How does that happen? And she said, oh, my God. Right. And I said, no way. And I was angry. I was angry at first. And I said, the politicians, the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa government, PTI, Imran Khan, have to be more responsible when they say that the drone attacks are happening. And what do you expect? Whether they say it in that way, complicitly in that way, that's how it's interpreted. There is no justification. Those families that are in KPK that suffer because of the drone attacks, I condemn them strongly. That is foreign policy. That is for the sovereign government of Pakistan to ensure that that does not happen and to find ways. But there is no way there is a justification that 7 people came out of wherever they did into a courtroom where the rule of law should be upheld, where there is no security, a country that knows that terrorism is rife and there is no security. And from that, the female advocates that are there don't have any security. Fiza was one of the first to be shot. And when I spoke to Saad and the family, they said in the morning, the only reason she was there really early was because she had a new trainee with her and she was showing her around the court, Madia. They both went into the courtroom, came out, were looking at the list. They saw a man looking suspicious. There's nobody around, there's no security guards, nobody. This is a country where they know that terrorism and those that want to actively get through will get through. There's no security there. There's no measures. That is the responsibility of the Pakistani government. And I say, when you say, is there hope for that country? Well, I would call upon my government here, the British government, the Prime Minister, Justin Greening, Richard Montgomery, head of DFID in Pakistan, and say, your policies in Pakistan need to be revisited and prioritise security. Has to be the top of the agenda. If you're there, I support DFID and the work that they do, and you are there for development reasons, then there is no development without security, and there is no security without development. So the British taxpayer that's paying all this money for development in Pakistan, then first of all, surely shouldn't we be ensuring that security is high on the agenda and the courts are the first place where the rule of law and people go for justice? That's where protection the most should be happening.
But do you think, Anjum, that the Pakistani state should be negotiating with the Taliban, the kind of people who will go and indiscriminately murder their own people? Should they be wiped off the face of the earth?
No, I'm not talking about whether they should be entering into a dialogue. That's for the sovereign government to decide how they should be coming around and deciding to talk with people on the borders or that are causing these issues, if that's how they see it. What I'm talking about is when the 7/7 bombers did what they did in this country, it goes without saying that our government has to ensure the safety of its citizens. You have to value the life. when that young woman woke up in the morning and went to court for her job, first and foremost, that security is a job of that government. And if we are there as the British government offering development work, then surely, and I know how DFID work in Pakistan, they build capacity of organisations and institutions in Pakistan, then surely security has to be high on the agenda. And the court of law has to be protected. Why were there no police? It took 45 minutes before anybody arrived.
My gosh. She was shot
in the neck. She was shot in the chest. There was nobody there. Madia was shot in the arm, the young girl that was training. She ran. After that, the gunman went into the courtroom and shot a judge. Could that happen in this country? Could you walk into the court of law and start shooting indiscriminately and nobody brought them down? 45 minutes. When a country is rife with terrorism and you know that this is going to happen, why is there no security there? And that's what the Friends of Fizer Malik are going to call for. First and foremost, an inquiry, out of which there should be an independent report to show that that will hopefully bring about security, at least in the courthouses, where people are trying to uphold justice. If you can't have the rule of law, then what have you got in that country?
So you should then link aid to security in a much more explicit way so that people who are living in rural areas, for instance, could have their vaccines stopped because of lack of security for courthouses in Islamabad.
Well,
because you're essentially linking the two things and saying that one cannot happen without the other.
It's about education. It's about education. It's about entering into dialogues.
It's about more than education.
It is, but it's having that dialogue of educating those communities and going to the heart of those communities. When you've got someone like Imran Khan, and I hear his rhetoric, you know, saying, well, Obama's policy on drone attacks, and of course they're going to come out of the mountains and start bombing us. That is not a sensible approach to have. It is no way that you can justify those that are coming out of... If you're going to stop the vaccines in the rural area, who are going to suffer? They're not the ones that are coming down to Islamabad and the cities and bombing.
That's my point about what you were saying initially, which is that DFID needs to look into security issues before British taxpayers start providing money for such schemes. Now, DFID will, of course, fund a whole lot, and the British taxpayer will fund a whole lot, a wide range of things that help Pakistani civilians. Now, if you start linking that to security as opposed to saying, well, look, the security issue is something we will help with, but it doesn't mean that because there is a lack of security, we stop helping ordinary civilians in Pakistan.
Let me explain that a little bit better to you. DFID run a program for education where they do capacity building of teachers. DFID will support accountability of collection of taxes. DFID will also deal with health and other issues.
Yeah.
One of the priorities, what I'm saying here, is that you have no development if you have no security. So if your aid workers are out there delivering vaccines and they're being attacked, then without security that can't happen. So first and foremostly, what we must do is secure. Yes, it goes hand in hand. We must say to the Pakistani government, your priority has to be security, the value of your citizens. And that comes right back here to the United Kingdom.
But we're talking about a country that can't even provide electricity for its own people, can't even provide education for its own people. We're talking about a country which does not have many of the pillars of a civil society that we take for granted here in the UK. I mean, there are huge problems that this country faces, isn't it? And you have to look at this kind of systematic corruption. You also have to look at the fact that there are many people willing to take money from the Americans and the American government and line their own pockets with it.
You have to take it all into account.
Yes,
the aid budget is a minute drop in the ocean to what that country can produce. And it's not that they can't produce electricity. I mean, a place like Balochistan, where you have the gas being, you know, you've got the reserves there. Ironically, the very town that it comes from has no gas to the residents. So it's not that they can't. It's the will to do for the masses. And that becomes an accountability process in corruption. But what we're talking about here is, first and foremostly, this is starting to affect the middle class, everyone. I mean, without security, you can't flourish at all. And why? How can a gun? Seven. Apparently, there were seven of them that went into this courthouse. Two of them in two separate courtrooms walked in, opened the first fire, and there's no one there. There's no security. And she's bleeding to death. And when she gets into the ambulance, there's no oxygen in the ambulance. She's still breathing at that point. This is a capital city.
You know, with the right equipment, she would still be alive
perhaps
today.
Perhaps she would have been. And this is why we say there's got to be more of an inquiry, a public inquiry into it. I think it's always
This is a public inquiry in Pakistan. Now, do you have any faith that such an inquiry would actually get to the bottom of what happened? Because, of course, ultimately, there are people in government who would answer with their jobs for this amount of incompetence. Now, how willing do you think they are, considering people report to us that the political system in Pakistan is almost feudal in the way that people vote? They vote en bloc for people they're told to vote for.
Well, it takes one person, doesn't it, to bring a change? And she's the angel of hope, and maybe that's what Fizza Malik and the friends of Fizza Malik are going to campaign for. That she is going to be that, perhaps that turning point to say, we want a public inquiry into this. Why did it take 45 minutes before a security? If you're saying, and you said this just earlier, that they're willing to take the government, I suppose that's what you were saying, willing to take aid and asking for aid and help, and that security is a big issue. There are apparently four intelligence services in Pakistan, and one of the best in the world, I suppose, I've read. I wouldn't know, but why didn't they know that these people had come into Islamabad? How did they find their way through all of that?
Well, if you think about the West here, Anjum, and what happened on 7/7, many of the same questions were asked of our security services post 7/7, weren't they? Many of those conversations were had post 9/11 with the American security services, with the CIA and the FBI. I mean, and these are first world countries, as they were formerly known.
You have a right to that. You have a right to ask those questions.
You do.
You have a right. Exactly. And that's what we need to call for in Pakistan. And people like myself and everyone else and British Asians that we work in those countries. And our governments provide aid there. What I'm saying here is that perhaps what we should be doing is looking to DFID and saying, well, let's play our part. We have a small role to play in this. And if we can do that for the human... I mean, you know, Fizz's brother was saying to me, these female advocates in court have no security whatsoever. I mean, he was being very bravado about the whole thing, but he was saying, you know, forget the male lawyers, they can look after themselves, but the females, it's horrible. There's no security measures in court and they can't do their job. They're government officials. Surely that should be provided. That's okay. The first. So
let's speak to Ghazan, who got in contact with us. Ghazan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Nihal.
Now, you say that you knew Fizza, is that right?
I knew Fizza when she was a little kid. She was born in Sharjah, and we were together there for 27 years, and she was born. I knew the family a long time. Tariq is a very close friend of mine. So is
That's her father?
Her father, and so is Amber, her mother. And they were a lovely family. She was so nice. I mean, I remember her as a little girl, and when I met her last time in Pakistan, I was visiting them. And she was a different person altogether, and I was very impressed. She had qualified from here, and then she was practicing in Pakistan, and she was talking full of confidence, and she said she won't do that. And she was an amazing girl. I mean, I can't believe when one of our other common friend texted me, it was 7 o'clock in the morning here, 6 o'clock in the morning, that she's been killed in a bomb blast. And believe me, we've heard these kind of stories long time, going back in recent times. These are happening, but this time when I heard for Fizza, because she was a very, very close to family and all of us knew her, and I really feel the impact of this kind of terrorist acts in Pakistan or in any country for that matter.
Do you think, Ghazan, that her death will make a difference? Do you think that attitudes in Pakistan will change. I mean, Anjum, who we're speaking to now, wants to see increased security for the people of Pakistan. Do you think that her death will make a difference in that respect?
I'm not too sure about that, Nihal. The problem is this: we haven't got a leadership. I think Anjum was making a lot of sense that Pakistan should be a self-sufficient country. It's not really, we're not lacking anything behind from the resources and sources point of view. We can produce electricity, we can produce gas, we can do lots of things, but what we are lacking in that country, and that relates to this security as well, is the leadership. Yes, Fiza is one of those victims of thousands of people have died during these things, but we feel the impact. I mean, let alone everybody. I mean, Tariq, I mean, her father, has served the country in a very senior position, okay? And he has served as very, very senior officials in the government and in ministries and all that. He is helpless. And when I speak to him yesterday, and he is completely helpless. He says, there's nothing. Nothing one can do if your own courts in the capital city haven't got even little facility like CCTV cameras. Where do we go from there? Leave alone the oxygen gas or anything that comes after. It's just unbelievable situation in Pakistan. I think I put down this to a very, very poor, very poor leadership. I think we haven't got that, unfortunately, in all these years. This is probably one of those victims that will go down into the list of people that have been murdered. And it's very painful from the close angle to know what happened. And now the family is in completely disbelief what's going to happen. Saad and Ali, I spoke to last week when they were at the funeral and all that. Now they are actually planning to take their parents away from Pakistan. That's the maximum they can do for as far as the family's guilt is concerned.
So they, as far as they're concerned as a family, Ghazan, it seems, and you can understand why, that they have given up on Pakistan.
Oh, no, obviously, I completely support them for that, because in the situation where we are now, I visited Pakistan in the last 5 months, I've been there twice, and I didn't feel comfortable for many ways, because although I was fortunate to live in an area where it is quite safe and fine, but the incidents are happening every now and then, and I think when I watch Pakistan television channels from different angles, and I think Karachi situation is one of the worst I've seen. There are crimes taking place all over the place, but I mean that kind of insecurity I've never seen in any place.
So you yourself, Ghazan, do not sound particularly optimistic about the future of Pakistan yourself.
Not under the current leadership, no. I'm sorry, but I have to say this, because they haven't got what it takes to deliver to people and give them the security and confidence to and progress in business or in life or in education or in careers. They are very short-sighted, and they are looking after their own vested interest in their own ways, but they're not doing anything to develop Pakistan into a proper develop and good sort of place to do business. That's the only problem we have there. Okay.
Ghazan, thank you very much indeed for contacting us, a family friend there of the Malik family. Anjum, I know for a fact that there are a lot of British Pakistanis listening to the BBC Asian Network each and every day. What can they do to lobby, to guide, to complain in order to make sure that Fiza did not die in vain?
We're hoping to put together the British Pakistani Forum on Security and Peace for Pakistan. I hear what the gentleman Ghazan said, and I can feel the pain. That I think putting that to one side, it goes back to the earlier callers as well. We must work together to create platforms. Otherwise, then you get the young people that go into Syria and feel that they need to take it into their hands and see injustice in a way that's petered out and feel that that's how they need to deal with it. This is the democratic way that when injustice happens, such as Fiza's life has been taken. I mean, what do you expect? Would you expect her brothers, Saad and Ali, to strap themselves up and go into the mountain somewhere and look for some innocent family there and get revenge and then call themselves martyrs? No. What you do is you work in a concerted way in the legal framework to raise awareness. And if out of this, Fizzer's death is not another statistic, and we managed to get security beefed up, or not even beefed up, at least to have some kind of security cameras in the very least in courthouses, then that's an achievement. The British Pakistani Forum, I feel that as a diaspora community that sends thousands and thousands...
Oh, millions, I can imagine, over...
Yeah, a billion, 1.3 billion, I think it is, overall, that goes into Pakistan, then we have a right to be able to use that and exercise that leverage of calling for security to be a priority, to value the life of Pakistanis. You see, what Ghazan said is that perhaps Ali and Saad will take their parents out and they can afford to do that and go and live in Dubai. And, you know, you can appreciate and understand that they can do that. But what about the 80% of Pakistanis that live under the poverty line and 189 million people, 50% under the age of 25? What do we do? Step back and say it's not our business, it's not our problem? Well, I live by a quote, which was a Nobel Peace Prize winner, and it was goes something like, the welfare of today's children is inseparably linked to the peace of tomorrow. We don't do anything. It's everybody's problem, whether that's Pakistan, whether that's Syria, whether that's Central African Republic. The world is a small place, and we have a duty to ensure that those that don't have that platform and voice, that we create that platform and voice, so you don't get the ones that came down with the AK-47s and started shooting and then blowing themselves up.
Mm. But you can understand why British Pakistanis will feel as though there are such monumental problems that country faces, that what difference can I make? What difference can I make?
Oh, you know, I have...
And I suppose, what is the answer to that question?
Everything can be... Everything you do, we say, you advocate. I mean, if you can't go out there and make a difference and work, then what you can do is you can advocate, hear, speak up, join organisations, lend your support. And you can do that. You can sit at home and at least say, you know, I condemn that. So everybody can do something. I believe everyone can do something. I feel, you know, my heritage belongs to most of the provinces of Pakistan. Both my parents were from East Africa. And you can say, well, you know, two generations ago, I suppose, that there was no Pakistan. My parents were born in East Africa. So, but what drives me to sort of do this, it's inequality and injustice. And as a mother of fourth children, my child is the same age as what Fizzer's is. My daughter's the same age as her, and she's got a life in front of her. Fizzer deserved to have that life. So we can all do something. To sit back and do nothing is cowardly.
Mm. So what do people need to do then? Is there a website where people can go via you and you can kind of channel... Is there a Facebook page? How can people get involved?
Yeah, I'm a director of AHIDA, which is it's on my Twitter account, actually. It's an international development association. And through that, hopefully, we're going to try and set up the Fizzer Malik, Friends of Fizzer Malik. And this will be a concerted effort to try and bring together a concerted effort to say, right, we need a public inquiry to begin with. We need to know why it took 45 minutes, why there wasn't any security. These questions need to be answered.
And then following on from there, of course, then to have those changes implemented. Anjum, thank you so much for joining us today on the BBC Asia Network. At Anjum Tahir Kelly, which is T-H-I-R-K.